Daniel chapter 9. Would you join me there? I'm going to ask you to do for me and experiment. And I'm going to share with you a couple of thoughts with regard to our subject matter, God on speed dial, that I trust will be an added incentive to the long list of incentives that you already have concerning prayer. If you would please, I'd like to have you read in unison, beginning at verse number 4 through the end of verse 19. Reading in unison. I'll start you off and then I'm going to listen to you as you read in unison. Daniel says, I prayed unto the Lord my God and made my confession and said, begin.
The great and dreadful God, keeping the covenant and mercy to them that love you, and to them that keep his commandments. We have sinned and committed iniquity, and have done wickedly, and have rebelled, even by departing from thy precepts and from thy judgments. Neither do we have hearkened unto thy servants the promise, which spake in thy name to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, and to all the people of the land. O Lord, righteousness belongeth unto thee, but unto us the confusion of faces, as at this day, to the men of Judah, and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and unto all Israel, that are near and that are far off, through all the countries whither thou hast driven them, because of their trespasses that they have trespassed against thee. O Lord, to us belongeth confusion of faces, to our kings, to our princes, and to our fathers, because we have sinned against thee. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him. Neither have we obeyed the voice of the Lord our God to walk in his laws, which he set before us by his servants the prophets. Yea, Israel have transgressed thy law, even by departing, that they might not obey thy voice. Therefore the curse is poured upon us, and the oath that is written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, because we have sinned against him. And he hath confirmed his words, which he spake against us, and against our judges that judged us, by bringing upon us a great evil. For under the whole heaven it hath not been done, as hath been done upon Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil is come upon us, yet made we not our prayer before the Lord our God, that we might turn from our iniquities and understand thy truth. Therefore hath the Lord watched upon the evil and brought it upon us. For the Lord our God is righteous in all his works which he doeth, for we obey not his voice. Now, O Lord our God, that hast brought thy people forth out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand, and hast gotten thee renown, as it is this day, we have sinned, we have done wickedly. O Lord, according to all thy righteousness, I beseech thee, let thy anger and thy fury be turned away from the city of Jerusalem, and thy holy mountain, because for our sins and for the iniquities of our fathers, Jerusalem and thy people are become a reproach to all that are about us. Now therefore, O our God, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplications, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is desolate for the Lord's sake. O my God, incline thine ear and hear. Open thine eyes and behold our desolations and the city which is called by thy name. For we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, but for thy great mercies. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, hearken and do. Defer not for thine own sake, O my God. For thy city and thy people are called by thy name.
Thank you very much. In the time that it took you to voice that prayer of Daniel, which is plus or minus just 3 minutes duration, I want to share with you some thoughts on our introductory part of this lesson, beginning at verse number 20. Listen to what I read. You just prayed these 17 verses, give or take, in less than 3 minutes, or right about 3 minutes. Daniel says in verse 20, and whilst I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, while I was speaking, he emphasizes this now, great impression upon him. While I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation, evening sacrifice. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision, which he begins to unwrap there, beginning at verse number 24. I want you to think with me about Bible speed. Bible speed. You and I are creatures that are subject to time and space. We are bound by gravity. As I understand it, currently the fastest man on the planet, and by that we would gauge or bestow that designation on a man, by how fast he is able to run 100 meters. And as I understand it, the fastest man on the planet today is able to run that distance in slightly under 9 seconds. 9 seconds, just slightly under. Now that's moving. That is really moving. That's faster than any thief carrying a ghetto blaster out of a hawk shop in New York City. That's faster than a person who is running from a dog. That's fast. That's really fast. But I want you to consider Bible speed as it relates to prayer. As I share this with you, I understand that there may be to the thinking hearer, and I believe all of you are, a reasonable flaw in the premise that in the time that it took Daniel to utter that prayer, the answer came from the throne of grace to Daniel's prayer room by way of the angel. Now think about that. What I had intended to do this morning was to show you what I think most of you have already seen in that Cosmos DVD where it gave an artist and a scientific rendition of the distance between earth and heaven and put everything in contrast and comparison. And one of the things that, had you seen it, you would come away with is the immense distance between us and the very presence of God. And yet we see here in this verse, it says that this angel, Gabriel, being caused to fly swiftly, came to Daniel's side in 3 minutes or less from that distance to earth. Now I realize that in framing it that way, that already your pick and shovel are already digging at the roots of that notion. I think probably you should be at least when you think this, that your God is omnipresent. Okay? Your God is omnipresent. But we got to understand what that means. We must also understand, too, about the location of the throne of God. Obviously, it is not on earth. It is said that when Jesus ascended, He ascended into the presence of His Father, and He is seated at the right hand of the Father. And so we understand that that throne is not on earth. It is in the presence of the Father. And furthermore, we would understand that that is in the heaven of heavens. That goes far and away and beyond the visible atmospheric heaven that we are able to see with our naked eye. Now, I'm going to take a calculated guess. Don't crucify me if I'm wrong, should you find I'd be wrong. And that is that I believe that the throne of grace is precisely where the throne of God is situated in the heavens. That's what I think. I'm not gonna nail my suit coat to that, but that's what I believe. Whether or not that makes any difference to you or not, consider this again, the speed. The angel shows up about the time of the evening oblation. We would, in our churchy jargon today, we say he came about the time of the evening service. Okay? The oblation is a worship service. A place when sacrifices would be offered. So in the time that it took Daniel to voice 17 verses in prayer, the angel reached him from the presence of God to the prayer room. Now what joy that ought to unfold before us when we consider prayer. If you would please come to the New Testament book of Hebrews, the 4th chapter, just for a moment. Hebrews 4 at verse number 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens. There again, reiterating what I just said. Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now consider Bible speed. When a person is facing imminent danger, and that person, being a Christian, begins to pray, "Help me, Lord," does he sit there in prayer hoping that God is not sleeping? Does he sit there in prayer hoping that God will hear his prayer? And even if he hears it, how long will it take for the answer to come? I mean, if a person is facing imminent danger, there's not a lot of time to waste. So consider Bible speed as it relates to prayer. Consider that. Consider Bible speed as it relates to prayer. And then calculate into the thinking what is found at Isaiah 65 and verse number 24, if you would look at that verse. Isaiah 65 and verse number 24. Now, I hope you understand that when we extract a verse out of a chapter, that we try to at all times make sure that it is consistent in its context, especially as we make application to what's there. In Isaiah 65, 24, Bible speed, verse says in part, "Before they call, I will answer." Before they call, I will answer. "And while they are yet speaking, I will hear." Now that's God on speed dial. If I might be so bold as to suggest. Now think about what is said there by the prophet. Before they call. Had that prayer that you read in unison this morning been originally out of your heart, before word one was spoken, before you said the first word, the God who is omniscient as well as omnipresent, already knew what was coming. And so, Gabriel hit the road. Before the prayer even is finished, in the scant time that it took for you to accomplish that, Gabriel's on his way with the answer. Now, do you suppose that while he was en route, that he got some kind of an email from God saying, here's what he was asking. So when you get there, you know, think through this, Gabriel, so that you're able to decipher everything that is concerning him. Now think about Bible speed. Before they call, I will answer. While they're yet speaking, I will hear. So when we come in here Wednesday nights to pray as a church family, and as you gather into your prayer closet at your home and you pray privately, think about Bible speed. Think about Bible speed. It occurs to me that in our church family, we have an arrangement. It's not unusual, and it's certainly not unique to our church family, where sometimes we get these urgent phone calls that so-and-so, as was in the case with Madeline Gillum. Madeline had suffered a couple of heart attacks very close together. And as Tim said to me, she said to him, I felt as though my life was leaving me. And so the prayer call goes out. Is there a lot of time to waste? And yet we read, before they call, I will answer. And while they're yet speaking, I will hear. Now think about that. And in the case of Madeline Gillum, God answered prayer. At this time, they're waiting for an opening to get her into a nursing home for rehab for a 2-week stint and then bring her back home. But she's much better today. And you say, well, aren't the prayers of God's people something wonderful? And I say, yes, they are. But never make this mistake. It is not the prayers of God's people that are doing anything. It is the God who hears the prayers that does it all. The hyper DSL of the prayer link to heaven from earth and from earth to heaven is faith. Faith. Faith is the wireless signal and is strong and universally accessible. Faith is the telegraphic wire which links earth and heaven, on which God's messages of love fly so fast. Now here's the thought in connection with that sidebar. As people saved by grace, Ephesians 2:8, as people saved by grace through faith, is it not reasonable then to walk by faith? In which faith finds its expression in prayer. Now think about that. Faith finds expression in prayer. Now, I want you to consider three things and use the best use of the time that we have left. God on speed dial. Think of it in terms, first of all, of days, hours, and minutes. Days first, hours, and minutes. First, consider, if you will, God's next day service. Hey, I may be wrong on this. I may be wrong. But let's, and I don't mean to skewer the U.S. Postal System or FedEx or UPS. Don't mean to do that. I have nothing but admiration for the speed at which they are able to deliver their parcels. And I mean that. I mean, hey, consider this. back in the Pony Express days. Okay. Those old horses were beat to death. But they could only deliver the mail in terms of weeks, depending on the distance. You write a letter, a couple weeks later it arrives at destination, providing some unsavory thugs don't waylay it. We've improved a lot since then. But still, if you go up to the post office and you send a package, you say, you know, I'd like to have this delivered tomorrow. Now, they're going to charge you next day rate. Now, I might be wrong. But in the package that I've sent, I've never known them to arrive the next day. Not that they were late, later than, you know, we're talking a day or two. I'll take that. But they ought to change the pricing and the labeling. How about they provide the day after tomorrow's service? More realistic. And adjust the price accordingly. Think about next day service, however, when it comes to prayer. Once you look into the New Testament with me at the book of Acts chapter 10. Acts 10. At verses 1 and 2, there was a certain man, his name Cornelius. Please notice that his location is Caesarea. I point that out because there's going to be a distance of some 40 to 50 miles that are going to be traveled to get the Pony Express to where it's supposed to go. But it is said about this man, in addition to that he was Italian, that he was devout, he feared God, likewise his whole house, and it says he prayed to God always. He prayed to God always. Now, I realize that in the book of Acts there's a lot of transition material. When I say that, I want you to understand that Cornelius, at this point in his life, did not have a crystal clear view of who the saving God of eternity really is. Did not. But, in verse number 3, he saw in a vision, please note, evidently about the ninth hour, an angel of God coming in. An angel coming. Gabriel came to Daniel to communicate to him. Here in Acts chapter 10 verse 3, an angel comes in saying unto him, Cornelius, and when he looked on him, it was afraid, he said, what is it, Lord? And he said unto him, thy prayers, thine alms are come up for a memorial before God. Consider that now. Bible speed. Thy prayers are come before God. Now in verses 5 through 8, you have a second location, Joppa. If you look in your Bible maps and you use the scale that is typically attached to those maps, you will notice that there's about a 40 to 50 mile distance between the two locations. And so when we look at verse 5, send men to Joppa, where Peter was at, and gives him a location, verse 6, where he was living, by the seaside. And then verse 7, when the angel which spake to Cornelius was departed, he called two of his household servants, devout soldier of them that waited on him continually, and when he had declared all these things unto them, he sent them to Joppa. Now please notice the first three words of verse 9. On the morrow. I'm going to interpret that, roughly speaking, as the next day. On the morrow, as they went on their journey and drew nigh unto the city, oh, by the way, think about 50 miles. Probably not 50. Let's make it easy for Western cultures. 40 miles. I'm going to say to you that I think that from the top of Route 422 down to the Fort Pitt Tunnel, okay, I'm going to say to you, I think that's about 40 miles. Now, how far do you suppose it would take you to walk that? Now, think about this. And this is, we're now 20 years removed. I tried an experiment one time. before the policeman chased me off the expressway. I started up here, okay, and walked from the point of 422 to Slatelick. All right. That's about 8 miles, give or take. All right. And that took me about 2 hours. 2 hours and a little bit. So if I do the math, help me with the math here today. How long would you suppose it would have taken me to go from 422 to the Fort Pitt tunnels on foot? 10+ hours. So that's doable. Doable, you know, minus restroom breaks, minus food stops. Okay. For men, it's easier, trust me. So we're talking 10 hours. It's doable in a day to walk, right? Now, if you're out of shape and you need to stop to rest, you get under a tree and you sit down and you take a nap, okay, maybe the next day you get there. Would it be safe to say that you could cover the ground comfortably in 2 days on foot? Would it be safe? I think that's reasonable. Then or now, I think that's reasonable. So, we pick it up again. Verse 9, on the morrow as they went on their journey, drew nigh to the city, Peter went up on the housetop to pray about the sixth hour. Became very hungry, would have eaten. And while they were made ready, he fell into a trance and saw heaven opened, a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners, let down to the earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, Rise, Peter, kill and eat. Peter said, Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And the voice spake unto him again the second time, What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common. This was done thrice. And the vessel was received up again into heaven. Now while Peter doubted in himself what this vision which he had seen should mean, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius and had made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. Perfect timing, would you say? Okay, now, while those men were coming, Peter was getting an advance notice. Where did that come from? The same place that the angel came from that was speaking to Cornelius. He was getting advance notice. As a matter of fact, he was going to choke on what he heard because he is a Jew. And ethnically speaking, what was being asked and portrayed to him in the dream would have caused him to violate Jewish scruple. And God quickly, and it's apparent who's doing the speaking there in verse number 15, what God has cleansed, don't let man call unclean. So at the same, anyhow, at the same time, he's finishing up these men at the door. They're at the door. And then we pick it up. He was doubting. The men are at the door. He called and asked, verse 20, does Peter live here? And Peter thought on the vision. The Spirit said unto him, Behold, three men seek thee. What is it that's, who's communicating with Peter now at verse 19? Who is it? The Spirit. Arise therefore, get thee down, go with them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them. Clear. We got next day service here. Cornelius gets the message, explains the circumstance to his messenger, sends them on their trip, and while they're on their way, Peter gets the advance notice, and he just finishes up. When the men arrive at the door, he gets advance word again, just go, don't doubt anything, just go. Just go. And they said, Cornelius the centurion, a just man, one that feareth God, and of good report among the nation of the Jews, was warned from God by a holy angel, please notice again the angel, to send for thee unto his house and to hear words of thee. So you have on verse 23, then he called them in and lodged them, and then what's the next one? Next verse. And on the morrow, Peter went away with them. Certain brethren from Joppa accompanied him. Then verse 24. On the morrow, after they entered into Caesarea, Cornelius waited for them and had called together his kinsmen and near friends. And as Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him, fell down at his feet and worshiped. Peter took him up and said, "Stand up, I myself also am a man." Talked with him. He went in, found many that were come together, and he begins the explanation. Long story short, I'm looking at Acts chapter 10, and this whole story about Cornelius, the messengers, and Peter, the traveling from Caesarea to Joppa and back again, all in response to divine communication of Cornelius and Peter. Prayer is in the context. And then Peter, contrary to his deeply held scruples, sent to the Gentiles. In the summary, verse number 25, as Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshiped. But the whole house was there. Verses 29 and 30, the explanation is this. "Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying as soon as I was sent for. I ask therefore for what intent you have sent for me." Cornelius said, "4 days ago I was fasting until this hour, and at the 9th hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing," and you know the rest of the story. He recounts the visitor at prayer meeting. At verse 32, the instructions, as you know, send to Joppa, get Peter. And again, a straight north-south shot down along the Mediterranean. 4 days later, we are all here to hear. Considered Bible speed. Look over in Acts chapter 12. First three verses will reveal that Peter is put in prison. Peter is put in prison. Do you suppose that the 911 prayer tree, as we call it, was activated? Verse number 5, where is the prayer, or where is the church at? They're having prayer meeting. Are they speaking specifically, or are they speaking generally? Very specific. You know, I'm convinced that there are times when we pray that we ought to resist the generalizations in prayer and narrow down our petition to the throne of grace and focus on one thing. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't times when general prayer should be offered and a multitude of requests fielded, given consideration, but I'm saying more often than not, the most effective prayer of a fervent, righteous man focuses. Here the church was focused on this that you read in verse number 5. And then please notice verse 6, when Herod would have brought him forth. And what is not so apparent in the English statement is the imminency of Herod's, or the imminency of Herod's intentions to get Peter to execute him before the night would be over. When Herod would have brought him forth, the same night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains. Typically that is a posture reserved for condemned criminals whose dispatch is imminent. And here's where he was. So as to, considering what's at stake for the guards, to reduce even the slightest possibility that this condemned prisoner should escape, going to try to eliminate as much as is possible any opportunity. And the reason being is that if the man escapes, the guards lose their life. That's tremendous incentive for being vigilant, wouldn't you say? Well, there he is. Listen, Herod has it in his mind, he's going to kill him that night. And then verse 7, behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him. There's the angel again. A light shined in the prison. He smote Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, "Arise, go quickly," and his chains fell off from his hands. No key necessary. Now, I want to give due credit to what's going on in verse 5. I believe that the chains fell off because the church was at prayer. But remember what is said in Isaiah 65:24. Before they call, and while they're speaking, I will hear. Chains come off. And the angel said to him, gird thyself, bind on thy sandals. And so he did. I mean, listen, there he is locked down between two guards, cuffed. And not only that, his sandals were removed from his feet. There's no quick getaway here in the books for Peter. And the girding, which he would find necessary to make a quick getaway, was also detached. So he's sitting there, totally vulnerable, completely at the mercy of his captors. The angel comes in, the cuffs fall off, gird yourself up, put your sandals on, get. Cast your garment about thee and follow me. And he went out and followed him and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel, but thought he saw a vision. Bottom line is, the angel comes, Peter is delivered, likely the same night that Herod was going to execute him. Then verse number 18, the next day. As soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers. What was become of Peter? When Herod had sought for him and found him not, he examined the keepers, commanded that they should be put to death. And he went down from Judea to Caesarea and there abode. Secondly, please, consider the hours. Consider the hours. From next day service to the hours. Back in the book of Revelation, chapter 18, Revelation, the 18th chapter, verse number 10, in the context of chapter 18, please understand that we are now in the latter 3.5 years of the tribulation period as would be described here. At the 10th verse, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. In 1 hour. Now, I do believe that'll be literal Babylon in Iraq at the time of judgment. I do believe that. Please also notice in verse number 17, it is said again, for in 1 hour so great riches has come to naught. Every shipmaster, all the company and ships and sailors, as many as trade by sea, stood afar off. Verse 19, observing the smoke of her burning, they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city, wherein were made rich all that had ships in sea by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour is she made desolate. In 1 hour, judgment comes. In 1 hour. You know what it reminds me of? You remember the account of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, chapter 4? Nebuchadnezzar was warned by Daniel concerning the vision that he needed to break off his sins, or he would be sprouting feathers and eating grass for 7 years. Well, in Daniel chapter 4, verse 33, the record is this concerning Nebuchadnezzar. In the same hour was the thing fulfilled. When Nebuchadnezzar finally got his nose so elevated that he began to drown in the slop of his own pride, the same hour the thing was fulfilled. And he got himself some feathers. And he began to live like a beast. Now, from the time that Daniel had warned him, 1 whole year had transpired. 1 year. He had 1 year to reconsider, but he didn't. And so judgment then would endure for 7 long years. But once his decision was made intractable, in 1 hour that thing that Daniel said came upon him. Now on the plus side, I find in John's Gospel, chapter 4, verses 46 to 54. Would you look there, please? John's Gospel. Chapter 4. Verse 46 and verse 47, a nobleman's son is at death's door. And here's what the appeal is. In verse 49 and 50, the man, the nobleman, appeals to Jesus to come down. And I want you, when you look at verses 49 and 50, you can rightly and freely read urgency into the text. Jesus said to him, "Go, thy son liveth." At verse 51, he's en route home. Before he gets there, his servants meet him on the way with good news. And here's what they tell him. He said, "Thy son liveth." Now please notice the speed here. This man, the nobleman, inquired of the hour when he began to mend. The answer? Yesterday at the seventh hour, fever left. Precisely the time when the Lord said, "Thy son liveth." Now that's speed, brothers and sisters. That's speed. And we could do well to note the same occasion that whenever you appeal to God in prayer for specific relief, and when God in His grace and mercy is pleased to grant it to you, and you become aware of that, it'll be a good exercise to strengthen your faith to go back and mark down the date in your Bible of the occasion and note the speed with which God delivers. Now, probably and sarcastically, you will find a lot of Christian people who have said or who believe, you know, I give up praying a long time ago because I found that no matter who I pray for or what I pray about, God doesn't ever seem to answer my prayer, so I just quit. And their testimony is that God, well, He doesn't care about me anyway, so they don't pray. It's a vain exercise. It's dumb. I mean, after all, consider the theology of that. How do you pray to somebody you've never seen before? So they don't. It's not a priority. But God answers. Verse 53 of this, it reads, "So the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus said to him, 'Thy son liveth,' himself believed in his whole house." Do you see the magnificent result when prayer answered is made conspicuous by the beneficiary? Don't be shy about what God does in response to prayer. Tell it far and wide. So the father knew, goes to the purpose for God in answering, that He does when He does, as He does. And in this instance, that the same hour that Jesus spake, He and His whole house believed. God is on speed dial. And then lastly, before we leave here this morning, consider the seconds. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 51, 52. How many of you are praying for this? "We shall all be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye." Seconds. Moment is the word from which we get atom. An atom. The smallest part. So much as to be, so small as to be absolutely and totally indivisible. In a moment. In the twinkling of an eye. The twinkling is the winkling. You wink your eye, you just blink. That's speed. That is speed. And so as to prayer, remember this. Jesus assures us, the prophet underscores it, that before they call, I will answer. Before they call. And remember, please, Daniel's experience. Greatly troubled by what he was seeing, confused by what he was seeing. And I'm telling you, if you start reading through the book of Daniel and you're going through all the stuff that's there, it's enough to put your mind in 60 different directions. Now, I can understand Daniel's turmoil. I can. I wrote in my journal, I'm nuts. I don't get it. I'm confused as Daniel was, so I don't feel so bad. But then I remember that that angel was caused to fly swiftly from the throne of grace to his prayer room with the answer. He didn't make him stumble around in the dark and remain confused indefinitely. What an incentive to pray on the part of God's people. What an incentive. Would you pray with me now? Our dear Heavenly Father, as we finish our time here this morning, we ask, Lord, for your help to grasp the truth of this, to get beyond the theoretical, and may it go from the head to the heart, and bring about a prayer time revival on the part of your people, not only here, but everywhere, Lord, where your people gather. What great things can be accomplished by you as your people link to you in faith and pray. Help us with this, Lord, for Jesus' sake. Amen.